We'll get the Personnel Committee, November 5th, 07:30 going. Item two, discussion item, reconsider two non-exempt employees to become exempt employees.
Thank you. So this is a proposal to convert these two positions that are the only two non-represented positions that are non-exempt, to convert them
and
to
exempt. And those two positions
exempt.
Are?
The two positions are the chief plant operator, excuse me, and the utility supervisor. And they're both supervisory employees, and yet they've been treated as non-exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act. FLSA exempts certain employees from minimum wage and overtime pay requirements, and these employees that are exempted are known as exempt employees and are characterized by payment of a fixed salary and the expectation that they will perform the duties of their position regardless of how many hours they were, no overtime pay, compensatory time, or premium overtime for working more than 40 hours in a week. And there are certain tests, and I included most of this because of former Director Merchant's concerns. So these...
Which, if I remember correctly, he was incorrect on all of them.
I believe so.
Okay.
We do meet the duties and
correct.
Salaries tests. So the salary test is anything in excess of $600 per week, which is met. So this conversion is really intended to eliminate overtime costs, but also ensure that the compensation remains competitive with regional averages for comparable positions. And so we received instruction last month from the committee to go back and look at historic overtime payments. And so we included that in the report, in addition to average salaries for comparable positions for both of them. And then given this evaluation and this timing of it, we recommend that it be implemented in late November, but we're recommending that the pay ranges be calibrated to the average, the bottom of the average and the top of the average. And then they're both positions are responsible for 24-hour operations in their assigned areas of responsibility, and they respond to emergency situations. And if we switch to the the chart, what you see there is the average of overtime pay, and you can see there's some variability. The utility supervisor has had an average of about 65 overtime hours, and the chief plant operator has...
For what time period?
2020, 2021, 2022, and 2023. So those are calendar years. And in 24... He does have, we have a year-to-date information, which is higher. We have had a surprisingly large number of unexpected leaks. I guess leaks are always unexpected, but in 2024. And the chief plant operator has had an average of 214 over the prior 4 years and is at 205 at the time of this, which I think was maybe a couple weeks ago. So the two positions are then listed below that chart with their current monthly and their current annual and the regional average, and then below that are the proposed changes to the ranges with the bottom for the utility supervisor being calibrated at that regional average of 109.9 and the top at 115 K, and the chief plant operator calibrated at the bottom of the range, 123, and the top of the range at 128,555. So for the utility supervisor, the bringing that employee up to the bottom would be a 0.15% increase, and that is before the overtime. And then if you brought him up to the top, it's a 5% increase. That's a lower level of change than is included in the chief plant operator, and that's primarily because of the differential between the two overtime activity levels for these two positions. The chief plant operator recommendation for the bottom of the range is 123, which is the regional average for chief plant operators on those 11 organizations, and the top being at 128,555, which is very close to the 1,000 per month. I think it's like 996 per month that we discussed last time, and is roughly a 10% change. And then on the last page, what you have are the various utility districts that were evaluated for their water and distribution salaries for those people. And we're using utility and distribution kind of interchangeably, because really we call it a utility supervisor, but it is more common for utility supervisor to be like parks and rec and different things. And so it really is distribution of water, underground piping and all that. And then the chief plant operator is responsible for water. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. So just going off of the 214 is kind of, can you go back to
the overtime? Yep, I sure can.
Overtime?
This guy?
Yeah, and actually that's not correct. So let's take, I would still think I won't say disaster, but in emergency situations, overtime would still be kind of required. And so I don't think they're 100% exempt, if that makes sense, from the overtime. Okay, so here we go. And what I mean by that is a couple of years ago we had a flood situation. We had crews, including Travis in his position, and I'm not sure if Ron was here, but those would be the types of situations that I would think would fall back to the responsibility of the GM to say I'm authorizing overtime for that period.
Yeah, the language of FLISA does say that they are not eligible for overtime.
I understand.
Or for compensating time off, but I think that what I've seen historically is that there is the flexibility that's offered to exempt employees to, you know, if they've finished their work, to be able to leave. So I'm reluctant to commit to actual overtime,
mm-hmm.
But there is the ability of the management to give, you know, flexibility with hours if they've, you know, had extensive work. And I don't know if Eric has any other experience with water in those situations.
Historically, even with Stockton and a lot of other entities, when you're exempt, it doesn't alleviate you as an emergency service worker. You're still expected during emergencies to be on site and to handle staffing. The difference is typically you're facilitating and managing and sometimes supervising that activity instead of being involved in necessarily the day-to-day operation of that activity. I don't know if it would pose problems, because typically in large storms like that, you're also seeking FEMA reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that if switching an exempt employee to non-exempt for that period would cause problems with reimbursement from FEMA.
It shouldn't, because FEMA doesn't pay on what the status is. They pay on the personnel costs.
What I've heard is they only pay on overtime costs, not on hourly costs. So it's only the overtime that they'll cover and that they reimburse you for, and they don't reimburse you for your normal day-to-day expenses, and I think that's where it may run into an issue. The city of Sacramento is notorious for utilizing FEMA and other agencies, and with my time at Antioch, that is what they found out.
Okay. No offense, I don't want to get to a FEMA level. That's just me personally.
I think during the storms of
2022,
2023, did the district utilize FEMA?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, one thing I didn't include in this write-up, but thought about it later, is these two positions currently don't receive admin hours. Most of the other all of the other non-represented employees receive administrative time off, and so this would bringing them up to exempt would also result in them getting whatever the board decides, but we have currently 40 hours for administrative time off for staff. 80. So that is another half a month, which is another, if you look at the various salaries there, it's like 45, 40, 800 roughly. Mm-hmm. And then we have the deferred comp that was already a benefit for them as non-represented staff.
No, I think that Travis and Ron don't get the deferred comp right now. Is that right, Travis?
That's correct. We don't.
You're eligible for
Well, I mean, I put into it.
You put, but you don't get the matching deferred comp.
That's correct.
So the bottom range is set at the regional average. Where in this are we? Are we taking into account the overtime? Where did the overtime go? We're not getting.
Well, so the current annual is roughly 117, so 117K, and then if you add in 14,827, that's the average. That would get you to 135, and so. That would be about 12,000 more than the bottom, and about 7,000 more than the top of the range. So the board can basically choose to have a premium level of pay, or
How does that same thing work out on the supervisor?
On the utility supervisor, if you had it's basically 110, and you added the 5, it'd be 115. So he's more, that position is more in line with the top.
As a non-exempt employee making that amount of overtime,
yeah,
is at the top.
At the top of the proposed range, which if we go back to the average, right, the average is 109, and we've chosen that average as the bottom of the range just because that's pretty much where we are right now. And so, you know, the board certainly can decide to, you know, make these as big as they'd like.
Seems like if you took today's rate and you added the amount of overtime that they're getting, which they're going to work that, they're just not going to get paid it, that should be somewhere in the middle of the range. Like maybe dead middle of the range. Am I missing something? Why would I want to become exempt if I'm going to get less money with the same amount of hours?
They don't have to work those overtime hours. Technically, in a supervisorial position, you're not the one that should be working overtime hours. It should be the staff. So that's one thing. The other is
but in
that
in our little organization, we expect that someone's going to be there in an emergency.
You're
probably right. In a big organization, a person can just call himself a supervisor and stay close to the cell phone, but in our organization, I'm not sure that's how it works.
So the other reason for it is that when it's not overtime, it becomes pensionable, and I think that's a benefit. Let's say somebody had worked 40 years and they retire, then they get 80% of that amount. Let's say it's $1,000 a month. That would be $800 more per month for the rest of, you know, his pension. Yeah. Whereas overtime, it doesn't go into that as a calculated value. So there's that plus the administrative hours plus the 2.5% contribution. So there's a variety of other factors there.
Travis, thoughts? You're on the ground here.
I'm going to defer. I made my last time, and I'll just stick with that.
Okay.
The easy question is, if Travis isn't doing the overtime work, who is?
Well, in a well-staffed and well-organized organization, you would typically have a deep enough bench that you'd be able to draw on people, and that's what we want to build. If Travis were to get hit by a cement truck and he's the one, the only one that we can rely on, then we're, you know, up a creek. So really we have about 5 other people, and we need them to be able to, you know, be responsive. If we're really talking about resiliency and the ability to, you know, not burn anybody out with excessive hours. I mean, if we didn't have, you know, a person who's willing to give so much, we would, you know, we would really be struggling. And so I think the goal is to have these layers of people who are capable, who we can rely on and call.
Yeah.
Can I just make one little comment?
Sure.
And Eric, please correct me if I'm wrong. The district, and this is just referring to the wastewater plant. The district is, we are a grade 4
mm-hmm.
wastewater plant. And we are supposed to have a grade 3 minimum grade 3 operator at all times working on the site. And I cover that
right
when I'm here.
Right.
If I'm not here during an emergency at the wastewater plant, and you just have a grade 2 operator, which I've got 2 operators in the process of getting their grade 3s. Do I technically still need to be on site, or is a phone call being available by phone? Okay.
So I'd have to look at it for wastewater. For water, you would be allowed to have a grade 2 that's on site.
Right. Like I said, this was just wastewater.
And it goes by your permit. So you have to look into what your permit actually says. But also in wastewater, most of your emergencies, you can shut down and divert. And most of your emergency times are going to be during the winter, because that's when water intrusion is at its highest. And that's also when we're off.
Right.
So it's kind of a new conversation for us,
mm-hmm.
In all honesty. But I do think from a risk and resiliency standpoint, it behooves us as a district to get staff to be doing overtime. It's also not an option for them.
Correct.
To choose or not choose overtime. It's an assignment.
No,
and so I think a lot of that comes into play, where we also utilize Travis in the sense that much more of using his knowledge and ability to teach and train staff. And in those critical emergencies, it is all hands on deck, including myself. And it is quite common that as an exempt employee, the staff below you quite commonly make a little more than you, but they also don't get the pensionable benefit, they don't get the time off, and they don't get usually the set family-type schedules that hold on to
them. Amy, could you just real quick go through that analysis of how this affects the pension, how much more, rather than being in overtime, being on the paycheck, how that affects.
Yeah. So let's take a simple example of a straight number, like $1,000 a month. And let's assume, we could assume 20 hours, or sorry, 20 years, 20 years of service. And 20 years of service at 55 years old results in a 2% formula. So that would be 40%. of the highest 12 months of pay. So if you have a monthly increase of $1,000 and you have the calculation of 20 years and 40%, then it would be $400. If they're, you know, 40 years times two, it'd be 80%. So you're talking about having that, that's the thing that fluctuates depending upon the years of service. And then that's money that would come to the individual in perpetuity. And so you'd take that, that's about, let's say at 4,000, it's about 4,800 a year, 9,600 for eight. And so that time, you know, you'd hit this break-even point. And I regret that I didn't do a chart that would show you, but you have present value of money, and then you have the current value, and you have, you know, let's say a lifespan of 20 or 40 years beyond, you have a considerable amount of pay that would come to the employee as a result of it being pensionable as opposed to being a one-time.
So in the case of the supervisor averaging $5,000 a year in overtime, and it goes on to his paycheck, what ballpark are we in as far as the effect on pension?
Okay, so there's some variables there that I don't know, but if we assumed, let's say 25 years of service, so 25 times 2 is 50%, so 5,000 is our static one time, and then let's say 50% of, we don't really have the proposal here, but let's say that's, I don't know what the monthly change on that one was. Let's see. At the highest range of 115,227, 9602, so that's about a $500 differential from the 9145, 457. So 457 times 50%. Is 228, so we could divide 5,000 by 228 and figure out that's 22 years. But the rate of pay would, so there's a lot of factors here, depending upon where the person is when this amount gets added into their pay, and if they have more years before they retire, then that hourly goes up, and that changes that as well. So.
Okay.
So.
I'm just putting myself in this position.
Right.
Do I think getting the more hours and the increase to my pension, I think without going into detail on the minutiae of the numbers, I think I would probably like that, be in favor.
Let me offer this, Director Janko. I would like staff to run back a couple of items, that FEMA question, right? Your idea, Mimi, of the graph or chart, to kind of explain that a little bit better. I'm looking for an implementation impact, and what I mean by that is the impacts would be cost to the budget, training of personnel to bring them up to what you were talking about, Travis, the two that we, or the couple that we have at two going to three. And then the implementation, I don't know if there's an immediate need as opposed to we give staff time to work this through and prepare it for the fiscal year 25-26. And then the implementation would be tied into that specifically, if that makes sense.
Into the what specifically?
That would tie it into that fiscal year specifically.
Okay, 25, I get it. Okay. Yeah.
And then I think that way, and we can bring it back to us, And then that can probably answer some of your questions, if that makes sense.
It would absolutely answer the questions. It costs the district more, and the employee is better off.
Mm-hmm.
It's that, kind of that simple.
Right. Understood. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. What was the next item?
The next item is the pay for performance manual. Oh, no, I'm so sorry. I apologize. It's the reporting change for the district mechanic to report to Mr. Houston.
To me, I thought this was a no-brainer, but unless I'm missing something.
Yeah, no, this is just to give the director of operations the ability to direct that employee to help both units and to have more autonomy over that. So. No change to any other aspects.
Right.
Just reporting.
Any other thoughts, Eric?
No, I think it'll help the district prioritize the criticalness of different competing needs, right? It's great that currently we're in the situation where we have a team that's very functional, works well together. But that isn't always the case, and I think this would kind of alleviate some of those concerns and fears if it ever were to change in the future.
Understood. Any questions, Randy?
Nope.
What I don't know is if this lies in your scope of authority. I think it does. I don't think it has to come to the board.
I didn't think that I could do organizational changes like that, but I'm happy to accept that. We brought the IT manager to the board. That was a new position.
So this is a current position. You're realigning. Okay. So to me, much like what we did with the reorg when Mark came on and realigned current personnel, unless you've got any concerns, I say it for us at the GM level to make the organization function.
Okay, then that's awesome.
And then I would just... Yeah. Put it in your GM report that we've done a little bit of a reorg, and maybe put the org chart attached to your GM report would be the only thing I would do.
Okay, we can do that.
Welcome, please come in. Have a seat.
Morning. Good morning.
And then
now it's the pay for performance.
Okay, so unless I hear something different from you, Randy, I don't think all these folks came to see my beautiful face.
Don't sell yourself short.
Oh, I'm very short. I would say, because I thought I understood it, I saw emails.
Are you talking about the pay for performance?
Yeah, I'm back on after our discussion. But I think it's too in-depth of a conversation to carry us over within 2 minutes of the next committee meeting. So I would say we probably carry this into December.
Okay. Thank you. Agreed, Mr. Jacob?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And then if we have anything else on the agenda, I'll push improvements back to 8:30 or something.
Please.
Or move personnel back to 7.
To 7?
Come on.
I'm here.
I got nothing to do but sleep.
Right?
You've missed a bunch of the beauty part of it. I'm sorry. Okay, thank you. I have... 7:59, Amelia.
We're adjourning at 7:59. Yep. And there were no public comments for the record.
Thank you.